the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, the election is over. As we begin with the new president in office, one of the top priorities is stimulating the economy. And one form of stimulus besides spending money are tax cuts, both at the corporate level and the individual level. Joining me as my guest on the program is Chris Hennessy. He's a lawyer and CPA. He's faculty director at Babson College School of Executive Education and is a member of the Putnam Business Advisory Group. Chris, let's start out, since this is tax season, Americans will be filing their taxes for 2016 here in the next couple months. I thought we might begin with where we are today in terms of tax brackets, the way income is taxed, and whether you're single or married, and then talk about where we might be going. So let's begin with tax brackets. Currently, we have seven of them, with tax rates ranging from 10 to 39.6%, and capital gains taxes anywhere from 0 to 15 to 20%.
That's correct, Jim. So that's exactly where we are today. And just to put this in some parameters, to get into that top 39.6% bracket, if you're single, you've got to be over $418,400 of taxable income, and married, over $470,700. So the current system, we start with gross income. Most people would think about that as wages, but also would include interest, dividend income, and so forth, or sole proprietor income. There are certain deductions then in getting from gross to adjusted gross, and then we have itemized deductions. For most of us, that's our mortgage interest, our real estate taxes, our charitable contributions, and we come down to taxable income, and then we go to the tax rate chart. So you're absolutely right. That is the current system. Capital gains rate, 15%, 20%, or zero, depends on your income. So, for example, a married couple stays in that 15% rate between $75,901 all the way up to $470,700. If they're lucky enough to be over $470,700, they jump to the 20% bracket. So that's the current system, Jim.
And for investors, Chris, people are unaware, if you have taxable interest because of the Medicare surtax, you could pay over 43% tax on your bond interest and almost 23.8% on capital gains and dividends.
That's correct. That's all part of so-called Obamacare, Affordable Care Act. And interestingly, Jim, to your point, this was all done through a reconciliation process. And now the Republicans very quickly will repeal Affordable Care Act through the same reconciliation process, meaning they will connect that legislation to repeal it to the budget. So part of that repeal will involve, and can involve, taking away that 3.8%. Now, there's a very fascinating planning issue here, which is the following. Will that 3.8% thus disappear very quickly in the year, like maybe by the end of February, meaning, okay, if I've got a big capital gain, then I want to push that off into March or April because it won't be subject to the 3.8%. That's something people need to think about and work with their accountants on.
You know, the other thing that a lot of taxpayers are unaware, it's not just that they have tax rates, but also depending on what your income is, you could lose a substantial portion of your itemized deductions, whether mortgage, charitable contributions, or state taxes. And let's talk about this phase out, or what was called the Pease Amendment, where you reduce your itemized deductions by 3%.
Yeah, so I'll give you the numbers, and then maybe we can use a little example here since I happen to have it in front of me. A married couple begins this phase out once they have over $313,800, a basically total income. It's really adjusted gross, but let's just say basically total. And for every dollar over that, they're losing 3% of their possible itemized deductions. So, for example, Jim, when you get someone with a married couple with three kids and their income's $400,000, they lose $2,586 of their itemized deductions. So in effect, and if they're at $500,000, they lose $5,586 of their itemized deductions. So in effect, that's just another hidden tax. Politicians like to do it this way because it's not reflected in a marginal bracket. It's kind of hidden in the back door. But most people will say this will account to another 1% to 2% marginal increase in taxes. You're absolutely right.
Now, we've talked about, depending on your income, you could face 3.8% additional tax on your investments. But there's also another tax that people aren't aware of, and that's once you exceed the limit of Social Security taxes, you pay Medicare taxes. But if you are single, making $200,000, married, making $250,000, you pay an additional 0.9% Medicare tax on your earned income, and that could be quite substantial. Isn't that, what is it? Is it 3.8 or 3.9 Medicare tax? Half of that if you're an employee?
Yes, exactly right. So I always use the example, you got somebody at $1 million of, let's say, W-2 wage income, and they're married, so they're over the $250,000 by $750,000. And you'd multiply that times the 0.9, and there's another basically $7,500 in taxes there, a little less. So far, we've explored Medicare surtax at 3.8%, phased out of itemized deductions, which could be 1% to 2% on a marginal basis, and then this Medicare payroll tax, if you will.
Well, this is interesting because Congress is now, the House is working on repealing the Affordable Care Act, which has been called unaffordable. If that happens, are they talking, Chris, about getting rid of this 3.8% tax on investments and this additional 0.9% Medicare tax? Would that be repealed?
Yes, both would be repealed. So it's hard to understand this, but the legislative process works the following way. You can avoid the 60-vote filibuster rule in the United States Senate by connecting legislation to the budget. This is called reconciliation. Now, that legislation cannot involve any policy decisions. So very simply, they can repeal a lot of Affordable Care Act by taking away these taxes. And that's going to be the first step. That's what's going on really right now. The second step is replace. Now, replace will definitely involve policy decisions. So that will take 60 votes in the United States Senate. Republicans have 52. They're going to have to get 8 Democrats to go along with whatever they put on the table. The most likely thing they'll put on the table is Paul Ryan's plan, which is on his website, regarding the replacement of Affordable Care Act.
So if we can summarize where we are right now under the existing rules, if you're single, the key figure is $200,000. If you're over $200,000, you get new health care taxes. $261,000 if you're single phases out your deductions and exemptions. In $418,000, you pay higher capital gains and dividend tax rates. On the married side, the figure is $250,000, $313,000, and $470,000. I want to talk about another tax that is hitting more and more Americans. Maybe you can fill us in terms of what the plan is, and that's called alternative minimum tax. It was put in place, Chris, as you know, to catch high net worth individuals that were sheltering their income with all kinds of tax shelters. But increasingly, because it hasn't been indexed to inflation, it is grabbing more middle class Americans and it's hitting them with a gotcha tax that they're unprepared for.
Yeah. So my standing joke on this is I never call it the alternative minimum tax because it's not an alternative. In other words, if your CPA tells you you owe the alternative minimum tax, you can't get around it. You can help the situation if you do the planning in advance of being hit with a tax. So here's the deal on that. There's a parallel tax system. You compute your tax the regular way, which we talked about earlier in the discussion, or the alternative way, you pay the higher of the two. What niches people or gets them with the alternative method is some of the deductions you get the regular way, you don't get the alternative way. The best example of that is you're not able to deduct state and local taxes. So if you live in a high income tax state, California and New York would be good examples, and you have high property taxes, non-deductible under the alternative method. In addition to that, you cannot deduct personal exemptions under the alternative computation. So very simply, what happens is you make an alternative computation, regular computation, and the data, I mean, the data is kind of staggering on this. This is data that would indicate if your income is between $200,000 and $500,000, you have a 48% chance of paying AMT. That's one in two people paying AMT.
Wow.
If you're $500,000 or a million, you got a 78% chance of paying AMT. And the average AMT, alternative minimum tax bill, is $6,500. So this is on top of everything else, Jim. Now, interestingly, under Trump, his legislation would propose totally repealing that alternative minimum tax.
Now, here's an interesting thing, because we're seeing a lot of activity in Congress. They're moving on repealing Obamacare. There's also talk that Paul Ryan and the Republicans have a tax plan, and President Trump has a tax plan. But let's set the stage for this, Chris, because right now, if we take a look at total debt, and I'm talking about federal debt, is very high by historical norms. Trump inherits $20 trillion of debt. And as you pointed out in a recent publication that you have done, is the CBO is talking about, even though the budget deficit may come down this year, it's projected to start increasing in the future as a result of entitlements. That's one fact. And then also, 67% of the government spending is on automatic pilot. So where are we going to get the money for the tax cuts, number one? Number two, infrastructure spending of $1 trillion and rebuilding the military. Where does it come from?
Here's my response to that. I mean, right now, when you look at the budget of the United States and you add up Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the debt, those are all items that have to be paid out. Rounding a little bit, but those items add up to almost $2.2 trillion. And the entire revenue of the United States is about $3.3 trillion. We spend around $3.8. So the whole thing that's driving those numbers is an aging U.S. population. Now, Trump comes along and he says, okay, I want to propose significant tax reductions, both individual tax reductions and corporate tax reductions. Now, come along and they do what's called static scoring. So they say, okay, you're going to reduce the tax rates, we're going to reduce revenue. And on that basis, the actual cost of Trump's plan would add almost $1 trillion a year to the deficit. Well, that's not bad at all. You can't do that. It's impossible. So now the economists redo the plans. They say, all right, but if we bring tax rates down, that's going to help the economy. We're going to get growth in our gross domestic product. That's going to have an impact on the revenue coming into the United States. So when you redo it, Jim, that way, the actual cost of this is probably more $390 to $400 billion a year, which is more manageable. Now, having said all that, I do not think Trump can get exactly what he wants. And the best example of that is the corporate rate. So his proposal is bring the corporate rate down from 35% to 15%. I don't think he'll get 15. I think he'll get 20 to 25. But this is the classic supply-side economics. It'll help get the economy going again. And the two best examples I can give you is 1961, John Kennedy, 1981, Ronald Reagan, and 1984, Ronald Reagan, exactly what they did.
So if we look at this, and let's go forward to what's being proposed, there are two plans right now, the Trump plan and the GOP plan. Trump would like to reduce the tax rates to basically 4-0. 12, 25, and 33. It's likewise with the Republican plan. That would bring it down from the current brackets, I think, are like 7 or 8. Investment income, Trump wants to attack, let's say, dividends, capital gains at 20%. The Republicans actually want to bring it down lower to 16.5%.
Yep, that's right. You want it a little bit lower. And notice that even Trump's plan at 20%, the 3.8% surtax would be gone. So it's a little bit better than today.
The other thing, both plans would repeal the 3.8% surtax, but let's talk about deductions and exemptions. I've read that, for example, Trump would limit itemized deductions to 100,000 single, 200,000, or eliminate mortgage, and the Republican plan would also limit itemized deductions. So how is that going to affect most Americans? In other words, if we bring the tax rates down to 33%, but if you happen to live in a high tax state like I do in California, where property taxes could be 2% and state taxes run as high as 13.3, in effect, you could lose a substantial portion of your itemized deductions.
Right. The only things that are sacred, so-called, is going to be the child deduction and the mortgage interest deduction in both plans, both the Republican and the Trump plan. But you're absolutely right. In high California, New York, you're losing your property tax deduction and your state income tax deduction. It actually, in those cases, you'd have to work the numbers out, of course, but those people are going to have maybe a tax increase in some cases, whereas in other states, it won't be that situation. Now, interestingly, You know, having said all that, a lot of this tax break will help the wealthy, the high tax earners, because remember, their marginal rate today is 39.6%. You're going to bring that down to 33%. So that's a 6 to 7% drop. But here's the other really interesting thing. Sole proprietors, somebody running a restaurant or dry cleaning operation, and they report that income on their own tax return, today could be paying as high as 39.6%. Trump's plan brings the top rate down to 33, but he also wants to bring the rate down for sole proprietors to 15%, which would be the same as the corporate rate. Now, again, I don't think he's going to get 15, but that could be a dramatic savings for sole proprietors and also people that are actively involved in what's called an S corporation, which only means that the income is flowing through their own tax return. So every situation is going to be a little bit different, but it's going to depend in some cases on where you live and what you're paying in state and property taxes.
Yeah, because this could be quite substantial for small businesses, Chris, because, you know, if you have a sub-S corporation, let's say you pay yourself a salary, and then let's say your salary is subject to 39.6, but anything above your salary is taxed at the corporate rate of 35%. So if Trump brings it down to 20%, for a lot of small businesses and entrepreneurs, that's going to be a substantial cut, actually better than the 33% individual tax rate.
Exactly right. So it's interesting to see how this will sort out, because they've gone back and forth on the 15% rate to sole proprietors. But I think that's what's going to eventually end up in the legislation. I don't think, again, it'll be 15. It could be 20 to 25, but it's going to be a reduction.
So let's talk about what comes first. Do you think the first priority will be like we'll have two separate tax plans? They'll work on a corporate tax plan and then they'll work on an individual? Or do you think they lump them up in one big giant tax proposal?
One package for a very simple reason. Strategically, it's easier because they're going to connect the one package to reconciliation, because obviously when you change the tax laws, that has a direct impact on the budget. They'll connect it to the 2018 budget, and now they bring it to Congress. They need one vote, and they only need 52 Republican senators, or they actually only need a majority, which would be 51. They avoid the 60-vote rule. So instead of splitting it into two pieces of legislation, one for corporate, one for individual, now you need two different votes. Strategically, I think it'll be one package. The other interesting question, Jim, is will it be retroactive to January 1?
Yeah, that was my next question.
So let me give you a little bit of history in this. Normally, in the timing of this, normally for capital gains, it's prospective. So a lower capital gains rate would only apply after the legislation. And you're really not changing the capital gains rate. What you're doing is eliminating the 3.8%. With income tax changes downward, in this case, it's gone either way. I mean, I've seen some situations in history where it goes back to January 1, and other situations where it's from the date the president signs the law. Now, the timing of this, my guess is you're not going to see the final legislation passed until July, but we'll begin to get a pretty good picture of it in April or May of this coming spring. So again, you got to think about tax planning. It's possible it'll go back to the first of the year, but the longer in the year this goes, the more likely it'll be from the date it's signed forward. So again, if people are listening and they're saying, okay, well, I've got a big transaction that I can push into September, then you might be smart to do that, because the tax rates will probably be lower in September than they will be in June or May.
And could it be possible, Chris, and I've seen this with, let's say, President Bush, in order to reach a compromise with Democrats, they say, okay, we're going to go along with the tax cuts, but we'll make them start January 1st of 2018 versus, let's say, 2017.
Right. That's a good point, Jim. Plus, the fact that is you got to run, as you said earlier, the budget numbers on all this. And, you know, the Democrats may say, hey, this is going to cost too much to go retroactive to January 1. So let's have this dated September 1 or August 1, right, moving forward.
Now, I want to talk about an area that is also included in tax cuts. Trump wants to eliminate the capital gains tax, and he would get rid of the stepped-up basis in cost for estates over $10 million. So let's talk about that, because this could be substantial. Let's say you're Larry Lotsabucks. You have a big corporation. You're worth $50 million. Trump's talking about getting rid of the estate taxes. That is a big chunk of change.
Yes. So repealing the estate taxes will be part of this whole tax reform package that he'll submit. So let's put this in some perspective. Today, the estate tax exemption is $5.49 million. So in essence, a married couple, double that, they can shelter $11 million of their total estate from federal estate taxes. Now, it really doesn't impact a lot of people. On an annual 12-month basis, there are about 4,000 deaths in the United States where the size of the estate is greater than this $5 million number. So it's not that many people. The revenue is small. The total revenue from the estate tax is about $26 billion. It's a political issue. So I think there's a good chance it'll be repealed. Now, you also mentioned something else, a little more complicated. What he would replace it with is he'd eliminate step-up to fair market value with an exception of monetary amount. So let me see if I can give the listeners an example. So if I died and in my estate I had a stock position that I paid zero for, $1 for, which was now worth $20 million, at my death, the cost basis gets stepped up from zero to $20 million. So that eliminates the capital gain. Trump's proposal would be, no, there's a limited step up with a $10 million exemption. So you take the 20, you subtract 10, and then you'd have a $10 million embedded capital gain. So when my beneficiary sold that asset, they'd pay capital gains taxes. But you know what? I'd rather pay a 15 or 20% capital gains tax than pay a 40% federal estate tax. So it's still a good situation. I think there's a good likelihood the estate tax will go away. It could be phased out over a period of years, or it might go away at once. And don't forget, Jim, if they do all this through reconciliation, legislation is only good for 10 years.
And this brings up an interesting question. So let's take Larry Lotzebucks, and let's say Larry is a successful high-tech entrepreneur. You know, a friend of mine has a Facebook client who's worth over $50 million, and he's 33 years old. So let's take Larry Lotzebucks. He's worth $50 million. They get rid of the estate tax, and they have the step-up. However, as you just pointed out, the reconciliation is only good for 10 years. Let's just say that Trump ends up being only a one-term president. A Democrat comes in 4 years later and says, oh, by the way, we're adding back estate taxes. So is this a planning opportunity to put assets in an irrevocable trust if they eliminate the tax? And I think back, Chris, you can remember the last decade under Bush and then under Obama, when there was not clarity in terms of what was going to happen with the state tax, what the exemption was going to be and what the rates were be. What are the possibility, let's say that Trump is only a one-term president, and 4 years from now a Democrat comes in and we add back estate taxes?
Yeah, and that's exactly what the planners are discussing now, is that doesn't mean if we eliminate the estate tax, you should just stop doing advanced estate planning, such as the use of gifting into an irrevocable trust. I think you'd have a huge opportunity to do that because there wouldn't be any gift tax issue. In addition to that, some states have an estate tax. You don't have that in California, but we have it in Massachusetts. So it's good planning from a state and local viewpoint. And furthermore, you take the growth out. So let's say I made a $50 million gift today, but between today and the time of my death, that $50 million grows to $300 million. So if the estate tax comes back, I'm removing $300 million from my estate. The downside is that once you've made that gift, it's irrevocable. You can't get it back. But, you know, at some level, people develop enough wealth so that they feel comfortable making large gifts. So you're absolutely right. There's going to be a huge opportunity here if this estate and gift tax goes away to do some planning.
And let's not forget, I forget how many states have state death taxes that range anywhere from 20% down to 12%. So there's not just federal estate tax, but there's also state taxes. So given all of this that we are likely to see with the Republicans controlling Congress and the budget reconciliation, they only need, 51 votes in the Senate to get this through. It is likely we're going to get some form or compromise between the Republican plan and the Trump plan, but taxes are going lower. What should investors do now, Chris, given the fact we know tax reductions are coming? We're not quite clear exactly what it'll end up being, but we know they're going lower. So what should somebody do right now?
Well, from a strict investment viewpoint, one would think about, okay, what companies or what sectors will this benefit? And one very broad way to think about this is on the corporate side, there's about $2.5 trillion that's sitting overseas that the plan will say, okay, bring that money back to the United States over 10 years, be taxed at 1% of the year. And then in the future, the problem's going to be gone. Now, what's the problem? Here's the problem. A multinational company, McDonald's, Google, Facebook, etc., they are taxed on all profits they earn worldwide. They're taxed in the United States. But if they leave those profits where they were earned, Germany, Australia, etc., they're not taxed until they bring them back. Okay, well, that problem's going to go away. So the multinational companies who have been leaving money overseas, their effective tax rate has been lower because this helps them. That's going to go away. That's going to hurt them. Whereas, on the other hand, if you took a company that generates most of its revenue just from the U.S., their tax rate, because they can't get the benefit of parking profits overseas, has been higher, will come down. So what are some examples? Well, the health insurance companies. All their revenues are from the United States, the regional banks. So if you think about this in sectors, you know, that's sort of a way to think about the tax legislation a little bit. It'll help the domestic companies. It'll hurt some of the big multinationals.
And if I was an individual or a small business, first of all, one might want to hold off taking capital gains given the fact that Obamacare tax is going to be repealed. There's 3.8% right there. If I'm a small business person, I might think of, instead of giving myself a salary increase where I could be subject to 33%, let's say, if that's the new rate, versus, let's say, 20 or 25% at the corporate level if you're a sub-S corporation.
Right, exactly. And the other thing you'd think about would be purchases. So, for example, if I'm a small business person and I purchase, let's say, equipment right now, I can depreciate it or even write off a lot of it in the first year. Well, that's current tax law. That'll probably change. And if that change isn't retroactive to the first of the year, then I might want to start doing equipment purchases before that change gets made so I can get the write-off. So there's a whole bunch of things you have to think about, and it's a little too early to exactly figure out what's going to happen. But you got to stay tuned into this because it's going to develop pretty quickly, I think, in March, April timeframe.
One of the things that we're definitely seeing, you know, every once in a while, you get a president that comes in and there is major shift in the economy based on legislation in fiscal spending. It happened with Ronald Reagan. He brought tax rates down from 70% down to 28%. Trump is talking about doing the same thing. So heads up for everybody. Listen, Chris, if our listeners would like to follow the work that you do, I know you have a publication or a slide presentation. How could they do so, please?
Yeah, the best way to do that would be to go into a website, Jim, PutnamWealthManagement.com. It's all one word. Putnam's P-U-T-N-A-M and then WealthManagement.com. And if you go to that website, you just put in an email address. You don't need a password. And all my stuff is on there.
Yeah, it's definitely great stuff, and it's definitely going to have a bottom-line impact, whether you're an investor, whether you're a retired or salaried employee or a businessman. Chris, I want to thank you for joining us on Lifetime Income. Great information. Let's hope we do get tax reform.
Thanks, Jim. We all need it. Have a great day.
Once again, folks, 2017 is going to be a pivotal year, from tax planning to the economy, to Fed rate hikes, to what's going to happen in the future. And as Chris was talking about, one of the ways to offset some of these expenditures that are being planned, whether on infrastructure or rebuilding the military, is what do you do when you bring $2.5 trillion of untaxed profits back home? Technically, that could be $250 billion of tax revenues for the government. So stay tuned. We will keep you informed as this legislation works its through, and we'll talk about the implications for both you, an individual as an employee, a business owner, or as an investor. In the meantime, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.